Welcome to the last Wednesday of the week, the Multitool, a sports podcast where we bring you highlights of the week in sport and we get stuck into some meaty middles as well. So join me, Simon and Ben on this, the last Wednesday of the week. On this week's show, unless you've been hiding in the middle of a desert or a forest somewhere, you'll no doubt been hearing all about the atrocious events that are happening in Ukraine as we speak. So as the sports podcast that we are going to get stuck into what are the ramifications in the world of sport and what can sport do about it, if anything. Simon's going to give us some of the details of what's been going on around with individuals and sporting federations around the world. And Ben also slightly cheerier this week because his team won something. I don't know what. I think it was a cup of tea. Ben said it was a cup. It was a cup of something. I don't know. We're going to get into all of that on this, the last Wednesday of the week. Good evening, gentlemen. How are we both?
Tremendous. Tremendous. Yes. Si, how are you? You say first.
Poorly. I'm poorly. I have the Rona.
I've got to let everybody know.
Yeah. I've managed to get away with it for over 2 years and it's finally caught up to me. And I'm a bit of a poorly boy, but I'm here today to talk with all you guys. I'm still reeling from the fact that Ben was holding up something earlier when you were trying to do your intro that looked like a stained glass window and what was seemingly a block of cheese. To represent Ukraine. So I appreciate the sentiment. So looking forward to diving into this, guys.
The thing is, you saw it was a Ukrainian flag. I think it was important to hold that up for this eve. Sorry about the Rona. Dan, thanks for asking. I'm just a little bit carbo-loaded. It's Shrove Tuesday. Lo and behold, they moved it to March, I believe.
We're all in our pancake comas, aren't we?
Yes.
That's wonderful. I mean, what a torrid week of news it has been. For those of you that don't know, of course, Russia have chosen to invade Ukraine and there are currently countless lives being lost. A absolute humanitarian crisis on quite a significant scale. And of course, a mega massive impact on many, many things around the globe, including sport, the topic of our show. So we are going to get into that. And Simon has kindly curated some of the headlines so far that have come as a result of that conflict. Let's first have a look back to what else has been going on in sport, because despite the rolling coverage of the atrocities, we do have other sport going on. So, Ben, let's start with you. Talk to me about this cup. What's the cup and why are you happy?
Listen, Liverpool won a cup. We won a cup. You know, we've been doing this show a little over a year now and Liverpool have been getting better and better, arguably for the last 5 or 6 years under Jurgen Klopp. And yes, the mighty Liverpool Football Club won the Carabao Cup, which was the Coca-Cola Cup and the Carling Cup. It's basically the League Cup.
Worthington Cup.
Was that the beer? Worthington.
Yeah, I think it came after Coca-Cola. It was Worthington Cup, which is the bitter, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it a town just down the road from here?
Worthing.
Worthington Originals, wasn't it?
Yeah, perhaps. The Carabao, what a Carabao. Is that chocolate?
It's a Indonesian energy drink, if I remember rightly. I could be wrong, but I believe it's an energy drink.
Not chocolate, but nevertheless, some kind of confectionery beverage. Listen, I mean, this game was basically crazy. We had disallowed goals, controversy, 22 penalties, and a Kevin Kelleher scores the winning penalty. Yes, his name is Quivin. Sorry, he's a very tricky Irish name for non-Irish people to say, but it's a wonderful name and a wonderful keeper nonetheless. I've always been very vocal about my general dislike for the League Cup. Me and you, Simon, have butted heads before. I don't think the top 10 teams in the league should get to play it. The fact that it's won by the team who effectively has the best B team doesn't sit well with me, but nevertheless, it's a trophy. We got the job done against a good side. Couple of points I want to pick up on there. Thomas Tuchel subbed on Kepa Arrizabalaga, a woeful goalkeeper who, for whatever reason, was bought for 70 plus million. You know, 3 years ago, he refused to leave the pitch when Sarri wanted to sub him. And this time he got subbed on, which was odd because the goalkeeper playing the game, Mendy, arguably the best goalkeeper in England right now, had an incredible game, one of the games of his career. And surely he has to stay on the pitch. In my humble opinion, I think Tuchel got that wrong, and I think it actually cost them the cup final. But obviously, good work for Liverpool. There were some shining lights, but Van Dijk was just a cut above. He looks to be getting into his stride again. Si, did you watch it?
Sorry, I was just coughing. Did you ask me a question?
Yes, Si, did you watch it in your COVID stupor?
No.
Okay. It was a cracking game anyway. I mean, listen,
it's a great conversation, gents. I'm really pleased that you're both here tonight.
I got bigger things to fry.
Do you want to talk about tennis instead for a bit, Ben?
Yeah, we'll just come straight on to tennis. Massive thing actually happened in tennis. Huge thing. Rafael Nadal beat our Brit, Cameron Norrie. That wasn't the big thing. He was always going to beat him. I was in the final of the Mexican Open. He donned the Mexican hat, sombrero, do I say, and took another win of a remarkable year. Nadal's unbeaten in 2022. Okay, he's climbing the world rankings now in fourth. But something massive happened in the world rankings. Daniil Medvedev, who we are going to be talking about a little bit later in the show, Russian Daniil Medvedev, who actually got beaten in the semi by Nadal, is now ranked world number one. Novak Djokovic got dumped out at the Dubai Masters by Vesely, and that meant that Daniil leapfrogged him. Now, it may seem ordinary, a little, you know, change from second best in the world to first best in the world, but the last time that tennis had a world-ranked number one who wasn't called Nadal, Federer, or Djokovic was in 2004. So that right wow. there is an example of the sheer dominance that I bang on about for the last year, talking about the big three, occasionally the big four with Murray. Massive change in tennis. How long Medvedev will stay there, we're going to be talking about a little bit later, because he might not get to play again this year in various tournaments. But he deserves to be there. He's been absolutely cut above, absolutely brilliant, but Nadal is chasing him down. 2004, 18 years, can you believe it?
Oh, there you go. So let's move on, because it may sound like we're slightly rushing the highlights, and we kind of are a little bit.
Russian the highlights.
Yeah, that was not even an intended pun, nor a particularly tasteful one. But we do want to get through these, because we want to get onto some of the big topics today, because we've got a lot to talk about. But let's go quickly, Ben, your final thing you want to talk about, from very public, open sporting to sporting behind closed doors, at what might arguably be the most exciting point of this new season, right?
Okay. It's going to be one of the most exciting points of our Last Wednesday of the Week new season, episode 4. We've been running a little over a year now, and I'm about to ask Dan about something that he is not allowed to sit on the fence about, because at the beginning of our show, our preamble before we hit record, I said that I despise Formula One testing being behind closed doors. Now, every February, the cars get together and they test more often than not in Barcelona. I think previous years we've seen it in Bahrain as well. Season testing is fantastic because we get to see amazing technology. We get to see the new cars, the new liveries, new drivers occasionally, okay, new sporting, new owners and sponsors. But this year it's been played out behind closed doors. Now, a couple of reasons I don't like it. First and foremost, I like to watch this, so it's not good that that's not available on television, live streamed. Secondly, testing is actually one of the only times a lot of families can go and see these cars financially. Okay, you can get into the stadium for 20 euros in previous years, you know, 15, 20 euros. And you can see hours of running. You know, I think a couple of drivers, maybe Lando, had racked up over 250 laps already. So I think they've really missed a trick there. I don't like what we're seeing. But in terms of the cars, I'm going to come back to you because, Dan, I think you do like it. We've seen porpoising. Porpoising, I think that's the right word. You're going to have to explain what that means.
Yeah, correct.
Porpoising.
Yeah.
We've seen, obviously, the behind-closed-door testing. But there's one thing as well which I didn't like. I saw a video. They use water trucks now to douse the track with water so they can test wet tires when there is currently parts of Spain going through terrible droughts. Formula One are not showing their sustainable hand. And there's also some terrible political decisions that we're going to talk about a little bit later on as well. Dan, defend Formula One behind closed doors. Come at me.
They could probably argue safety reasons for testing on wet tracks and having that wet running. But yeah, I totally take your point. It's not a good look. And Formula One is master of not good looks, right?
Master.
You know, when we look at some of their equality statements, I think they call it, or personal or driver individual statements, whatever they ended up calling it, how much they fudged that up at when they started doing that a couple of years back in the wake of the George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd. And so they've not got a good track record. I completely agree. Let's focus on testing. I completely agree, Ben. I agree with you. I don't think it should be behind closed doors. I don't think it serves a purpose. The only people it's for is for the teams, because they're also, because it's the new regulations, right? And the reason I didn't seem affected by it, which is what we were talking about pre the show, is because of how much social media coverage there was of it. And there were reporters there in the pit lane. Sky News had people there. You could see the cars. You could see some of the running from the thing. So I probably saw as much testing as I normally would in my day to day. I completely agree being able to go and see it for 20 quid is a bargain. So I think it should be viewable. I shouldn't think there should be TV cameras there. I probably saw as much, but I don't know why it's the only people they're protecting are the teams themselves, which I think is not in the spirit of it.
Now, a couple of points. We want to move on, and we're not rushing through the highlights. For any other reason that we've got so much to talk about with regards to world events and how they are directly affecting sport. But a couple of points on Formula One. We obviously spoke to Andrew Benson a couple episodes back. Get a listen to that. Absolutely amazing. But it was very much around the journalistic aspect of Formula One and his job and the incredible job he does do. We didn't actually get into Formula One, and these cars do look incredible. Simon, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at some of the pictures, but they are incredible. So I'm going to commit to episode 5 of Last Wednesday of the Week next week, having a full meaty middle discussion of what's to come in the Formula One season. I cannot wait to do that. But we're again going to talk about Formula One a little bit later. Si, have you seen any of the cars?
No. Interesting statement. It'd be like Dan...
the ones with the four wheels.
Yeah, it'd be like asking Dan if he's watched any basketball or football or anything else that's sport-related. No, I haven't.
I've definitely seen more NFL than you have Formula One.
I doubt you have.
100%.
What, this year anyway, or in general?
Probably in general.
Lies. I used to watch it when I was a kid. That's why I know
the
so
porpoising.
Much
sorry, Ben. To come back to the porpoising, just to clarify that technical term, and then we'll move on. The cars essentially have this new way of sucking themselves essentially to the ground to maintain traction. They bounce up and down, so they have the appearance of a dolphin going in and out of the water. So they kind of have this kind of almost rocking but bouncing up and down effect as the kind of aero catches and then releases and catches again. And basically that's what teams have spent a lot of the time trying to grapple with on the straights.
Why did they not then call it dolphining or something? Because it looks actually a bit more like sealing.
I think it's a well-known term from back in the 70s and 80s when they had the ground effect cars before.
Poor poising. Yeah.
All
okay,
right.
Interesting. But there you go, Formula One. Super excited, but sad I'm not able to see it. Wow. Yeah. Highlights in under 15 minutes. My section, that is a season record.
One for the annals of history.
I think that's a year record. That's not a season. There's only 4 episodes of this season, so that's not much of an achievement.
Okay. I'm not going to lie. I can see that I time you both each week, and you're both about even Stevens. So
I just
enjoy the fight between you both. It's quite fun. Si, bring it to us. What have you got for us this week? What have you been watching?
So I've got 3 brief points that won't total up 15 minutes, I can tell you that much. First of all, I'd say it's actually a tie. Thai energy drink. I do apologize. Not an Indonesian drink. I was slightly off with my geography.
But not the main Thai energy drink that we all know and love. And sponsors of this show, Red Bull.
Oh, look at that. Look at that. Beautiful. If only. Right. So, Marcelo Bielsa, he has been going through a torrid year. You could argue that Leeds were going through some form of... it's the second year they're back in the Premier League and they're not doing very well. If only there was a type of syndrome that maybe we've talked about in the past. A nice obvious case of second season syndrome. Leeds are basically only outside the relegation zone by 2 points over Burnley, who have two games in hand and are actually starting to pick up some wins and some good results. They shipped, I think it was 15 goals in 4 games. They got shellacked by, it was Man City, I think, absolutely destroyed by them. And it's just not looked good. And they've started to look, obviously they've had some injuries, but it started to look unfortunate in their performances. And it looked like it wasn't going to go very well for El Loco Bielsa, as apparently he's known. I've just looked that up. I didn't think that was his nickname, but apparently it is. So he's out, and Jesse Marsh of Red Bull fame. We're talking about Red Bull. He has actually managed New York Red Bulls, Red Bull Salzburg, RB Leipzig, and now he's at Leeds United. So an American manager has come in. He did really, really well in Salzburg. I think he won something like back-to-back cups and league titles. He's very, very successful over there. Pretty bad performance at RB Leipzig and was gone within, I think it was about 4 or 5 months. But now he's got a job at Leeds. He's very excited to play, to manage him. Yes, Dan?
Have you just described Ted Lasso? Is it Ted Lasso? Please, can it be Ted Lasso?
Effectively, people are calling him Ted Lasso eventually. I think it's a crazy risk to bring in a guy who is completely untested in the Premier League with a team playing so badly and expect him to get particularly good results.
Sorry. Believe. What?
No. I won't believe. I believe.
I think important to say, though, I think in season one, Ted Lasso got his team relegated. So the signs aren't great.
Parallels.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Spoiler alert.
I do have, because I think it's important to discuss this. How did we, as a podcast, overcome the second season syndrome? And do you think Leeds' downfall was buying Daniel James?
I can answer point one. Mm-hmm. Excellent editing and production value.
Okay.
I can also answer point one. In when you set an incredibly low bar, it's actually very hard to go below that bar. And that's where we are currently. So that's what I would say. It could be Daniel James, going back to your other point. It's just not looked good for Leeds this year. They can't defend. This kind of gung-ho performance that they tend to have is not worked out very well for them at all. But the other thing I would like to say is just to kind of throw it out there, because I'm conscious about apparently I spend too long on my highlights, is how can a British manager not get a chance? You know, maybe they could have poached Sean Dyche. Scott Parker's doing well at Bournemouth. You've got, I'd even take John Terry. Yes, he's a little bit unproven, but he's got some experience in the Premier League, obviously. But no, they went for a completely unknown American guy. Maybe he's going to do fantastic, but I do not hold out much hope. I think he might be a Bob Bradley in disguise. Apologies for our American listeners, but Bob Bradley is a shockingly shit Premier League manager who was at Swansea for a quick cup of coffee. Moving on.
I just want to add, I think I absolutely agree with your trepidation around Marsh, the new Ted Lasso in the league, but Bielsa had to go. I don't think there can be any qualms about that. We put 6 past him. I think they shipped another 4 against Spurs, and they're playing bad football and they're not scoring. I mean, at least they were scoring last year when they were conceding a few goals every game. And Bielsa, regarded as this incredible manager, but struggled, and it was right to sack him, because a new manager can sometimes stop the rot, and all Leeds need is sort of 3, 4, maybe 5 victories, and then they'll stay in the league. So I think it was a good decision. So
5 victories out of 11 games is going to be tough ask for Leeds, I would say.
Perhaps,
given the performances so far.
So from American managers to American football.
Literally was going to do that segue myself, Dan. I forgot your role in this podcast for a minute there, so I will leave it to you in the future. Yeah, so American football, you'd think it's a quiet time of year. I may have mentioned this briefly on a couple of podcasts we've had over the last few weeks, but the NFL Combine, where basically lots of college athletes run around in their pajamas, is starting. It actually has started today. We're getting some of the GM interviews and stuff from each team. We've got the player interviews and the medicals the following day, and then the fun stuff. So the 40-yard dash, the bench press, cone drills, all sorts of stuff like that. For anyone who's into NFL, this is fascinating. For anyone who isn't, it sounds god-awful. Ben, I suggest you get into it in the future. It is well worth a watch. It's good, especially if you're going to be putting out mock drafts in the foreseeable future.
I'm excited. I've already seen a handful of mock drafts today. People talking about which free agency players, people they want to get rid of. I've got one question about the combine, because I know we want to move on quickly. Do teams want to see some players struggle at the combine so they will purposely fall down the draft order and they'll be able to get a hold of them?
Yes. So a bad combine usually ends up with a slight fall down a down the, you know, the big board of most teams. Furthermore, a lot of teams put out effectively what they call subterfuge, and basically they will put out stuff that is you know, harmful to that player's stock. Maybe he tanks an interview, or he's got attitude issues, or there's a nagging injury that they're worried about, in the hopes that that player will fall. Because obviously, if you're a very, very, very good player, chances are you will go very early in the draft. So if you can put out these little rumors and things of that nature, there's a chance that the better teams who are further down the draft order will get a chance at these big guys. So that this happens a lot. And I think a lot of players... a lot of teams are expecting or hoping that certain players have a bad week at the combine, and they can pick them up and have an absolute bargain.
I was going to let you do your segue, Si.
No, Dan, you have made it very clear that you are our segue king. By the way, I believe the inventor of the segue actually rode his segue off a cliff, but that's another thing entirely. Dan, fire away.
Is that real? Does that happen?
That actually is a real thing. I don't know his name. You might have to Google it.
There you go. That's unpleasant. Well, yes. From someone that stopped going or went off a cliff to something else that's not going still, Major League Baseball, I didn't have it. You stumped me.
You pulled it out. Pulled it out there, didn't you? I'm very impressed. MLB lockout, Major League Baseball.
It sounds like it's a very sad story, though, so I don't really want to make light of it.
Right. It's quite a while ago. I mean, you've got a couple of years cushion. A little bit easier to digest. The MLB lockout, Major League Baseball, mentioned it previously multiple times now. It's still going. They are almost resigned now that opening day will be affected, but the MLB themselves, the commissioner and everyone else, is adamant that they will not bow to player demands, and we could be losing as much as a month of the regular season. So lockout years are very, very often shorter years anyway. But yes, it looks like we're onto it pretty nicely here. And it's probably going to be a sign of things to come, because you've got the NBA lockout possibly coming in the near future. NFL possibly as well. So we've got some situations where various leagues will be starting a lot later. But yeah, it looks like there is no end in sight at the moment.
So why would an NFL one happen? And what on earth are you going to talk about every week?
It would actually break my heart. what happens with a lot of these leagues is you have something called the collective bargaining agreement, which is effectively when the ownership and the players' associations agree on certain things, whether this is compensation packages, whether this is max salaries, how many players can be on a team, all those sorts of things. So this will be agreed every once in a while. I think actually the NFL one's not coming around for a few years, because it was agreed right before COVID hit, I believe, which actually gave the NFL players a bit of a cushion. So it might be a few years for that one, but I think the NBA is coming up very soon. So If, yeah, these things aren't agreed, it usually ends up with a strike from the players. But as said, we shall see, and maybe there'll be a sad Simon in the very near future.
Yeah. Ben, is this is the equivalent here, the Formula One, the Concord Agreement between the teams and the FIA and Drivers Association, or you know, whoever it's between? Is that similar?
Or almost exactly. Whereas the NFL and MLB are owned by the competing teams, if I'm not mistaken, Simon. Whereas Formula One is obviously owned by Americans, by people. The Concord Agreement is similar. Teams have to come together. But MLB is in a tricky place right now because they're also trying to modernize the sport. And there's some kind of... it's just basically a very, very tricky political time to be the MLB, and it just doesn't seem like the season's even going to start ever. Who knows? What a shame for all the players that should be at spring training right now.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your highlights of the week in sport. Don't forget, listeners, we are very, very grateful for those of you who rate our show on iTunes or wherever you listen. Also, please do like and subscribe and share. If you're enjoying the show, share it with someone. Tell someone about it. They may not have heard it, and you never know. You might just lift their day. But you can find us on all the usual podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at WednesdayPod on either. Okay. Gents, a meaty middle. Many people have said, you know, problems between Russia and Ukraine have been going on for a while, of course, but did we honestly think we'd be discussing, war in Ukraine at the level that we are and its impact on sport today? Just a couple of weeks ago, we probably couldn't have foreseen it ourselves, could we? Not being on the ground, so to speak. A lot going on, a lot to unpick. So I'm going to totally hand the reins over to Simon, who's prepared, frankly, an entire catalogue of sporting events that have resulted in just 5 days, day six, day five now. So, yeah. A lot's happened in a short amount of time.
Yeah, so obviously we could, in theory, speak about the whole war and invasion. Let's be honest, it's an invasion. Anyone who says otherwise is a tosser. We could talk about this ad nauseum, but as you said, we're a sporting podcast. So I'd like to kind of do a different skew on things. And what we've kind of come up with is basically the war in Ukraine. Can sport make a difference? So we're talking about how sport has a role to play in this. Can they effectively help in some way to potentially change the minds of the populace, especially in a country like Russia? And I don't mean to be contentious here, but a country that has a very, very controlled media, a very controlled amount of information that is heavily refined before being released, effectively a propaganda machine, as it were. Is sport the way to maybe open up the eyes of the Russian people and potentially Mr. Putin himself? So we'll talk about the various bodies first, because there's quite a few bodies that have already come out and made varying degrees of sanctions towards Russia in some, and Belarus in some form. So let's just go through it, guys. So you've got the IOC. Apparently they called for the stripping of various events for Russian-held events. So anything in the near future, which, as we will find out in a second, constitutes a lot of things. So the Judo Federation have suspended Vladimir Putin as their honorary president. I know he's a black belt, but why he was an honorary president in the first place is another matter for another day. You've got the International Chess Federation, who've also banned all Russian and Belarusian sponsorship. And I must say, this is a heavily dominated Russian sport. So some of these decisions are being made by Russians themselves, which is a very interesting thing to see. You've got junior swimming, which was meant to be in Kazan in August, which has now been cancelled. You've got the skiing World Cup events. Any in Russia are now being banned, which is actually farcical, because there was a cross-country skiing event being held in Russia the day after Russia invaded the Ukraine, which just consisted of several Russian athletes. So it's a bit of a farcical situation, but thankfully the skiing federation seemed to have got their act together a little bit more. BWF, the badminton world body, they have banned all Russian athletes and all Russian-held events. Ice skating has banned all Russian athletes. And I think this is a country that is particularly good at ice skating, as we have talked about in recent weeks. So there's plenty of others. Volleyball. So lots and lots of different world bodies and various sports have already banned Russian and Belarusian athletes or held events or sponsorship. So a kind of a mix, higgly-piggly mix. There are still sports that have been relatively silent. I feel like tennis seems to be lagging behind a little bit compared to others. Ben, I'm sure you'll be able to talk about that a lot more than I can. But moving on from that, we've also moved on to one of the big ones, which is FIFA and the UEFA. So after much pontificating and rumours coming out that FIFA were just going to allow Russian teams to actually compete under a neutral venue as the Union of Russian Football or something like that, they've actually come out with a full ban for the foreseeable future for all Russian teams. So the Russian men's and women's international teams have both been banned. The men's Russian team have been kicked out of the Qatari World Cup. If they got there, they had a playoff game against Poland, but Poland made it very, very clear early on they weren't going to play that game. So that was done. St. Petersburg was also stripped of the Champions League final. That's been moved, I think it's to Paris, I believe. So some early moves there. Spartak Moscow, I think, were kicked out of the Europa League. Quite a few things in the world of football. Ben, did you have any thoughts? Do you think it's the right way to go? Was FIFA's umming and ahhing a bit of an issue, or is it maybe just them trying to do the right thing?
Yeah, I mean, the UEFA sanctions kind of is a big one. And FIFA, UEFA have ended their partnership with Gazprom, the vast Russian energy company, conglomerate, whatever they are, basically huge financial hits for UEFA. I mean, they've been sponsoring the Champions League for many, many years. A couple of sort of points on that. First and foremost, Putin loves sport. He has openly admitted his love for sport. He is a fervent sporting fan. Okay, so in terms of if you called these sanctions, these would be hitting Putin where it hurts. He loves sport. He loves being involved. He loves Russia having the world's sporting stage in their country. And you sort of liken this, these huge sanctions and sort of financial hits weren't an option in 1939. And this is what I am comparing this to. Yes, of course, there was trade and commerce and import-export 80 years ago. But the level of investment, things like the Gazprom pour into events like the Champions League, this is also new to everyone. It's kind of a seismic shift. We've also seen the women's team won't be at the Euros, the Russian women's team, the men's team won't be at the World Cup. But let's consider if there even will be a World Cup. If it does happen, this becomes a full-scale European war, then all of this is completely a moot point because there won't be any sporting events to contest anyway. A couple of comments you made about the IOC. Yeah, they've recommended to sort of worldwide governing bodies that all Russian and Belarusian athletes be prevented from competing. And I'll get onto, I do think, assuming, I'll get onto the sort of pros and cons and we'll get into the discussion. But I want to just quickly say about tennis. Obviously, we've heard from some real vocal players like Svitolina, who said that she's not going to play against Russian or Belarusian unless they play without banners, without flags. And Medvedev, we just said before at the top of the show, the world number one tennis player. Tennis is such a global sport. Took to Twitter on Sunday with a plea for peace. He didn't sort of comment on the current situation in tennis, but simply said that all kids have dreams, just their lives are just starting, so many incredible experiences to come. That's why I ask for peace in the world, for peace between countries. So all these sporting stars are getting involved. And I know with Dan, we're going to get onto Formula One as well. Dan,
Well, yeah, I just wanted to mention Formula One before you get stuck into the, you know, the value of this happening. Of course, Formula One almost had their hand forced by the drivers very early on, didn't they? Sebastian Vettel, one of the first to come out publicly and say he would not race in Russia if they still race there, followed by Max Verstappen, who said something about it as well, which is quite surprising, I think, as someone that is fairly, you know, tends to keep politics out of sport and focus on the racing. He said it as well. And then a massive backlash against Mazepin, his comments, which were essentially, I'm going to keep politics out of sport and focus on the racing, which, as you can imagine, went down like a ton of bricks. But yeah, they met that night. And the FIA, Formula One management said, yeah, we won't race in Russia, which I can't think of a time where Formula One have had their hand... I don't have the phrase.
Had their hand forced.
That's the one.
The reason they have is because we're talking about the Sebastian Vettels of the world. We're talking about the Lewis Hamiltons because you know he would have done the next day, and Max Verstappen, world champion. You know, Vettel leading the cause. A quick note on Vettel there. He's becoming a champion for good causes and moral high ground, a far cry from the driver that we saw in Malaysia, multi-21 Seb. I mean, we all love Sebastian Vettel now. You know, to keep it focused on the sport, the Ukrainian Automotive Society have called for the FIA to ban all Russian drivers. The Haas has removed...
Well, what they've chosen to do now is, and Simon, you kindly pointed out before we came on air, was it just announced that the FIA are allowing Russian and Belarusian drivers to drive, but not under their country flags.
Yeah, but why would listen, we've got so much to unpick, but I want us to pick on that right now. Why would they have Mazepin racing in the Haas when his funnel is shut? What is Mazepin? Does he have private funds that he's bringing to the team? I let's be honest, I don't think Mazepin's starting the 2022 season, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, we do want to make this about Formula One, but yeah, it's an interesting choice. Clearly, money talks. I mean, money keeps people in seats in Formula One, so I'd be very surprised if there wasn't a promise or a checkbook being sent somewhere. You know, that's the way it goes.
Okay, we'll go back to Simon via the route of football, because that's something that, there have been some incredible changes. Manchester United have also dropped Aeroflot from their sponsorship. So these do feel like sanctions. I'm going to sort of say one statement, and Si, hopefully you can riposte that. I don't think Russians should pay the price for their dictator's war. I think it's absolutely crazy. I think penalizing Russians for something that Vladimir Putin is doing, because it seems to be driven from Vladimir Putin and not any of the Russian people. So why are we punishing Russian sporting stars and Russian fans that love their sporting stars? Medvedev has some fierce Russian fans that love him, love tennis, and same with football. The Russian national team is a very well supported team. Are we hurting the wrong people here?
No, you're entirely wrong with everything you've just said. Now, the reasons I will say this is because ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm not saying they're complicit in any of the actions, because this is not a particularly democratic country. I don't want to shock everyone with my comments here. This isn't a country that probably fairly voted in Vladimir Putin, and if they had, their fucking bananas. But at the same point, the way that you put pressure onto countries is by effectively sanctioning fans, athletes, because athletes especially are the people that can have a say, but also so can fans. These are the citizens. These are the people, because that's the only way that Russia, unless they go completely bankrupt from the financial sanctions that we give, that is the only way that they will be able to have a voice and potentially halt this Russian invasion, is by putting pressure, by demonstrating. And as I said earlier, it's effectively highlighting things, because to a lot of these Russian people, they have no idea. I don't want to talk about politics too much, but lots of these Russian soldiers were going and thinking there was a training exercise and they found themselves in the Ukraine. This was something that the Russian people have little or no idea about. So by banning them from certain competitions, by punishing the fans, by punishing the athletes, you actually are putting the power back to them to make a potential change. Furthermore, the Ukrainian teams, the Ukrainian athletes, now I believe they're actually the Paralympic team are going in full, but you're going to have a lot of athletes that aren't going to be able to compete now because of the actions of this Russian government. We've ought to talk about things like Alexander Usyk, heavyweight champion of the world, due for a big fight in the near future, probably with Tyson Fury potentially, or maybe Anthony Joshua. He has gone back to fight. He has left his London base to go back and fight against the Russian invaders. So that is my big riposte to you, because yes, we are punishing the wrong people, but effectively we are putting pressure on them to make fundamental changes that could save lives and effectively avert a world war. This is the only way I can think that this is. And also, you're talking about, if you let them have the Champions League at final in St. Petersburg. First of all, there's a safety issue, a massive safety issue, but also there's a financial boon and incentive for Russia to be able to have this competition. So that would be the other thing. There's a financial element to this as well. So yes, we may be punishing the wrong people, but the alternative is to do nothing, and to do nothing makes you just as complicit as anybody else.
Yeah, so perhaps then you liken that to financial sanctions that have been delivered by NATO, members of NATO and America. Obviously, the Russian ruble now is worth absolute pittance. I mean, it has been devastated. We've seen pictures of the queues for cash machines in Moscow, because people think that cold, hard cash, they should have that now in case things get worse. So the sanctions that countries are putting on Russia is already devastating the population. So maybe sport, I mean, what does sport matter in reality? And you're absolutely right. I do agree that sport might be the thing, as sickening as it is, above life and death. Sport might be the thing that makes Putin turn around. You know, so we're not going to get in the context of actual discussion of troops on the ground, but I just feel that this isn't going to be a week. It's not a 2-week social media war. It feels like me, this is the start of something that might go on for years. Does that mean that there's a whole generation of young Russian and Belarusian talent that is absolutely just the whole career is devastated and gone because of this action?
It's possibly. Dan, did you have something to say? You look very poised to say something.
Yeah, but come back to Ben's point. I can circle back to it. It's fine.
This is a possibility. I mean, this may be an issue. And I think it comes back to my original point. If that may be the case, then unfortunately, that so be it, effectively. I mean, it will be a crime because, yes, despite their troubled history in sport, Russian athletes have an amazing part to play in sport in general. I mean, you know, they've got fantastic Olympians, the ones who are clean anyway, fantastic Olympians. They've got a decent football team with some good players and all these other things. So we could be robbing the world effectively of a generation of their talent. But at the end of the day, so be it. I think if Russia has to learn that their actions have consequences, then sadly, this is one of the ways that they will. Will this do any good? I don't know. I think Putin is hard set on continuing all of this madness. So whether this will do any good, but it's another way that we can potentially knock some sense into the man. So hopefully this will have its part to play. As you said, maybe this is one of the things that helps tip the balance. Whether it will be is something that we will see in hopefully the near future. But as you said, it could be something that goes on and drags on for a long, long time, which will be absolutely catastrophic for the world and for the Ukraine itself.
So we've talked about the kind of the sporting associations, the organisations, effectively almost indirectly doing financial sanctions as well as the countries against Russia through removing them from various competitions and having various events held there. And we've seen so many images of thousands of people packing the streets of Moscow, St. Petersburg, wherever, to protest against the war, and being arrested and forcefully taken from the crowds and imprisoned for protesting against the war. Now, athletes, we've talked at great length, are in a very privileged position, aren't they, given their global reach, their public's sort of facing. So is that another way in which sporting has a unique opportunity for good, where we have people like Medvedev, you know, being able to talk openly against what's happening without fear? Or, well, they probably still have a bit of fear, and probably rightly so in some cases, but they have a unique position that they can take, whereas some people on the streets of Moscow can't, because they will go and get arrested, whereas our sporting stars can speak out. So we've got individuals now standing up on you know, the TV stage, so to speak, and speaking out against it. Is that another unique thing that sport brings to conflict in this sort of modern day of social media?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And I think it shows the power of sport. And we've seen the power of sport in previous comparable times. Can I say that? Maybe in South Africa, we saw it with the rugby team under Nelson Mandela. We saw that focus. We've seen how sport has united people post pandemic, which devastated large parts of the world. And sport has quickly galvanized with Ukraine and the rest of Europe in this fight against Putin. But it may be in vain anyway. I mean, we've seen pictures online of 60 plus kilometers of tanks rolling into the country. One thing that is interesting, I know Si wanted to sort of come back to you on that point as well, is if you've been following the BBC News and Sky News, sport has been alongside the discussion of warfare, military decisions, words from Zelensky and the head of NATO. Sport is such a global power. And yes, these people do have massive voices. Medvedev speaks to millions of fans, not just Russian fans, but everyone. And I hope that sport can be the savior. We should all say, oh, you know, what is a game of football when lives have been lost? It's nothing. You know, a game of football means absolutely nothing compared to the loss of real humans. But the power of someone like a Cristiano Ronaldo, I'm just using his name because of his stature in the world, is immense, immeasurable almost. So, yeah, I think sport not just can, but is responsible to make a difference and make a protest, Simon.
Well, I mean, talking about what Dan was asking earlier as well, sports stars, especially these tennis players and various other you know, sports, especially the ones that travel a lot, have a very unique idea of the world in terms of they've probably been to a large number of these countries. I mean, yes, we've all traveled abroad at various times in our life, but, you know, Medvedev, for example, has been in more countries than I've probably had hot dinners. So they have lived in, you know, in a variety of different places. They have seen what the West is like. They have seen what the Russia is like. They've seen everything in between. So they almost have a very privileged position to potentially educate people on these issues and give more of a balanced point of view. And I think that is, once again, just another area where sport is fundamentally important with its place in the world, just outside the actual playing of the games itself. I think it has an element of ability to educate. And I know this goes back to an age-old prospect. We were, you know, age-old question we've had in over the last few years of whether sport has a place, you know, within politics. And once again, I think it absolutely does. So I think these sports stars, especially these Russian stars at the moment, have this amazing ability to potentially educate those who are uneducated on these ideals and potentially, you know, change a few viewpoints.
I want to sort of go on to a specific detail because I want to pick your brain briefly about Abramovich, Roman Abramovich at Chelsea. And that was obviously a big discussion there itself. But I want to give you an idea. Perhaps say China never condemn Putin. Perhaps they even say, listen, that's we agree with his decisions. Do these sporting sanctions, we'll call them for want of better words, extend to parties that don't disagree? So could we then start seeing Chinese sporting stars barred along with Belarusian and Russian and further to that, any other countries who would jump on Putin's war?
I mean, that is an interesting ideal. I mean, you have a issue where at the moment, let's just turn it into a politics show a little bit.
But Dan? Yeah. He's not said Boris Johnson yet.
Yeah, he's not even slagged off Boris yet. So China need, I've fostered closer relationship with Russia within recent years due to the potential need that will come around when, you know, the possibility of China effectively doing the same with Taiwan as the Russians are doing with Ukraine. So there's part of the element which also is a worrying development in the world as we speak at the moment. So during a vote recently, I think it was on the Security Council, the Chinese did abstain from actually voting on the issue, which is effectively is the equivalent of enabling Russia to continue. But I think at the same point, if you start going down that level of route, that if China starts to vote in favor on a couple of things towards, Russia and benefiting Russia in some regards, then I think it will end up in a horrendous place of, financial war, at least in the short term, which is going to be disastrous for everybody. I don't actually think China will go that far. I think, in fact, they probably almost try to distance themselves a little bit with just how badly it's all going for the Russians. So that's something to be considered, but I can't see it going that way because I think that will end up in a massive financial crash that would probably ruin the world. Because if you think China have so much money in so many places, it would be disastrous, surely, if we start sanctioning China as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And before Dan sort of dives in on the politics bandwagon, because, he's dying to talk about Bojo and his various speeches over the last 7 days. Roman Abramovich basically has given up stewardship of his club. Now, a couple of points on that. First and foremost, obviously, Abramovich is Russian. Although not a friend of Putin, it's important to say that. I think his Putin bought family land, which was vast oil reserves from the Abramoviches, and that's how he then made his money. But I don't really care at all about that history today. What I do care about, though, is he's handed over stewardship, which he's not even allowed to do. So right now, nobody knows who's allowed to control Chelsea. And rumours are, and it's already been in the Telegraph and Sky Sports, that Roman Abramovich is accepting offers now for Chelsea Football Club. Now, that is immense sporting news because two reasons, again, on that. Damn, there's so much information today on the last Wednesday of the week. I love it. First and foremost, Chelsea are a powerhouse. Champions League winners, Club World Cup. They're effectively the best team in Europe right now. I mean, that's fair to say. I mean, they literally are the European champions. Okay. And on the back of that, they're also currently building or have plans in place now and have commenced building on the £1 billion Central London Stadium, South London Stadium, that will house Chelsea for future years, 70,000 seats or something there or thereabouts. Man, there'll be a I don't want to say the word fight, that would be tad uncouth. There would be a scramble for the signature of Chelsea Football Club. What will happen there, Si?
So I think going back to what you were saying originally, so this has all been a bit knee-jerk from Roman Abramovich because I don't think he had a successor in mind. He's taken a step back and he's tried to offload the stewardship, as you said, to the Chelsea Charitable Trust, who seemingly had no idea that this was going to be offered to them and have actually not accepted as we speak. So the situation is fluid and ongoing. I believe, as you said, there may be offers coming in very, very soon. I'm sure some people would like to throw a cheeky bid his way. Effectively, we have to think that a large amount of the reason that he is potentially stepping away is because he is fearful of sanctions that will be coming towards him and his office in the near future, which will effectively disadvantage Chelsea significantly. So that's the real reason. I don't think there's any other reason other than that. The UK government and various other governments in the EU, etc., etc., have all thought that putting pressure on individual oligarchs will help potentially sway the opinion against against Putin, because let's be honest, if you get enough billionaires anti you, then it's going to cause you a big problem. So yeah, Roman Abramovich has been kind of left scrambling a little bit. Whether he sells, it'll be very interesting. It came out yesterday that he was not thinking about selling, but then as you say, it's come out today that he will be receiving offers. So it's a very fluid situation. I think he could sell. It would be a prudent thing for him to sell, because as you said, we don't know how long this issue will become, this invasion, this conflict will go on for, and therefore he could be at a real disadvantage. Now, his travel arrangements are slightly different to a lot of Russian oligarchs, because he actually has a Israeli passport. So he is not hampered by that, unless people ban them from their country, in which case it becomes a whole another situation. But yes, it is a fluid situation. It is an incredible thing. You didn't think, if you're a Chelsea fan a couple of months ago, you didn't think your owner was potentially selling the team. But there will be offers for that team, because as you said, they are very successful and they are very, very profitable. So we shall see. And I'm sure we'll be talking about this in the forthcoming weeks.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely incredible, the response from Sport, with some beautiful shows of solidarity in stadiums. The Carling Cup, Carabao, whichever the League Cup is now, had a big one. We've seen, obviously, the flag and T-shirts with peace, not war. Dan, I guess you'll have to wrap us up and move us on with a final peaceful word.
Well, I think so. And I think, sure as night follows day, sure as Simon talks about NFL, there will sadly always be something for Sport to stand up and take a stand against or for. And I think we're starting to see, and we've convinced ourselves, absolutely, haven't we, during the course of our short history in podcasting, that Sport can be a force for good. Its impact variable, but it's a platform that can and should be used at every opportunity and possibility, and we hope that long continues, because sure as shit, conflicts aren't new, and they're not good. The Ukraine crisis and humanitarian disaster that is unfolding before our very eyes will not be the last, and it certainly wasn't the first. So sadly, we'll inevitably keep a watch out on that. And don't forget, you are inevitably going to have increased anxiety and stress as a result of all this insane doom scrolling, especially off the back of 2 years of a pandemic. So do yourselves a favor, log off, go outside and play a bit of sport, get out in the park, kick a ball about, look after yourselves. It's unnatural and not normal times, so don't spend it watching the scrolling news. You can get in touch with us. Tell us what you think sport should be doing. Do you think sport and politics should mix? If not, why not? Tell me, you might come up with a good argument. Tell us, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Wednesday Pod on either. Gentlemen, lots to happen, of course, on the national stage, and I'm sure that we'll have more to talk about over the coming weeks, sadly, and hopefully we'll may even have some good news. But in the meantime, there will be other sporting events happening. What's coming up? Ben, let's start with you. What's got your eye for the next week ahead in the world of sports?
Now, one thing I want to talk about, and it's what Si talked about at the top of the show. Yes, the NFL Combine. I'm pumped. I'm super excited. You can watch it on NFL.com. I believe it's free to watch. Mm-hmm. And it's Thursday night. I believe it kicks off. I think it's 9 o'clock on Thursday night till 4 in the morning. And then on Saturday, 9 till midnight. Something like this. But you can watch it, obviously, in the morning, or you can watch it on rerun. But yeah, I'm going to be tuning in Thursday, Friday, and Saturday because I want to see, 350-pound men run in 4.5 seconds the 40-yard dash. Honestly, it's mental how fit these guys are. And you always get a kind of teaser for which head coaches are at which scouting event. Obviously, last year's was kind of interrupted by by COVID quite heavily, and that affected a lot of it. But this year, I think we'll be back with a bang. Really looking forward to watching that. And yeah, FA Cup is ongoing as we speak. Man City have beat Peterborough, and Crystal Palace have won again against Stoke. Crystal Palace strangely becoming a wonderful footballing side under Patrick Vieira. Yeah, so football, listen, football and NFL combine for me this weekend. Listen, that's pretty exciting, I think.
Nice. Si, what about you? What you got going on? Anything exciting?
Literally nothing, to be honest, apart from the NFL Combine. I think Aston Villa plays soon, which I'll be very excited about. But yeah, it's not a slow period necessarily, but there are less things at the moment taking my fancy overall. But I said the NFL Combine has been so eloquently and so thoroughly discussed is probably my number one focus as we speak.
Excellent. Well, exciting times for that, I'm sure. Well, let's wrap it up then. It's been a brief show, but wow, some shit old stuff happening. And let's hope that whatever impact sport can make a positive impact in global events, as we've seen in the past. Don't forget, look after yourselves, be kind to each other. And just want to say as well, actually, you know, if you're feeling helpless, like I am, I can speak for others when I'm sure it's easy to feel helpless. There are lots of places you can donate goods and cash, such as UNICEF, Save the Children, Red Cross, British Red Cross. All these people will happily take your cash to go and help all those fleeing war in Ukraine. So thank you very much for listening. All that's left to say is I've been Dan.
I've been Simon.
And I've been Ben.
Until next last Wednesday of the week, be kind.